You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
First, you have to understand what a gamble is. We're going to talk about that. But before that, we're going to say hi to Facebook. So here we go. Click this button. There we go. There's Facebook. Hi, Facebook. All right. So today's topic is, would a Las Vegas gamble be a better bet? So in order to get a grip on this, our topic, by the way, is hypertension therapy. We got to first understand what a Las Vegas gamble is. Now, before we do this, I want everyone to place their bets. You on Facebook, you gotta take a position here. I want you to pick a number, any number, between zero and as high as you want. It could be $1, $10, $100, $100,000, $1 million. If you lose the bet, you don't have to pay up, all right? So there's no risk here, but just pick a number, an amount of number you would comfortably bet, knowing that you will never, ever get a penny back, number one. Number two, you will never get the prize that you bet for. So you're not going to get a Cupid doll. You're not going to get a piece of chewing gum, a free toaster, none of that. No car, no house, nothing. So this is the amount that you're willing to bet, knowing your dollar return is going to be zero and that you will get no material benefit from it. So I want you guys on Facebook to pick a number, you know, place your bets right now, and I want to know how much would you bet. These are the rules. You're never going to get a penny back, and you will get no material benefit. Just say it. Okay. So everyone's got to, and be honest, I don't want people just throwing a zero up there, because we all know we've thought things were going to work out, spent a little bit of change on it, and it didn't quite work out. So what would be that amount of money that you feel comfortable with, you know, betting and losing? Okay, so you got your number, you wrote it down, you at home, I'm going to trust you, write it on a piece of paper, you don't have to tell me the number, just write it down. Okay, good. Now, I want you to know that casinos, we're going to go with slot machines because slot machines, there's been a lot of research, a lot of documentation. We have a lot of information, so we can talk about slot machines. All right. So your average slot machine has a payback percentage of 90%. What does that mean? For every dollar you bet, you're going to get, you can expect more or less to get 90 cents back. Okay. And the casino will take about 10% of all money and put it into the slot and give away the 90%. So they're going to keep 10%, give away 90%. But this special bet I'm telling you about, they're going to keep 100%. All right? You're getting back nothing. All right. With any payback percentage under 100%, the casino will win over time. So in most gambling jurisdictions, get this, the law, that means the government has stepped in and made a law, requires, that means they must, or it's breaking the law, that payback percentages be above a certain level, usually more or less 75%. This is important. The government has said, look, these people are being taken advantage of. They're gambling. They want to gamble. We're going to put a limit on how much exploitation, or call it mistreatment, but exploitation, the gambling establishment can engage in. So gambling establishment must pay out at least 75 cents on the dollar. All right. But guess what? The payback percentage in most casino machines is much higher than the minimum, often in the 90 to 97% range, because casinos don't want their machines to be worse than their competitors' machines, or the players will take their business elsewhere, right? So the odds of a particular slot machine are built into the program on the machine's computer chip. In most cases, the casino cannot change the odds on a machine without replacing this chip. So despite popular opinion, there's no way for the casino to instantly change the payout on a machine. All right. And so I can believe that jurisdictions actually pass laws demanding that casinos pay out a certain amount of money. So I had to go check this out. So I went to www.americanscasinoguide.com and slot machine payback statistics. I went to this site and said, so for the, this is for Arkansas, I'll start with the A's. For 1 year period, July 1st, 2017 through June 30th, 2018, notice these are more current statistics for slot machines than we have for United States survival. Just want to point that out. But their slot machines are monitored more closely. All right. The average gaming machine's return at Oaklawn, must be in Arkansas, was 93%, and at another casino was 92%. Let's look at Colorado. Colorado, the payouts went from a low of 91% to a high of 95.5%. And these numbers reflect the percentage of money returned on each type of machine and encompass all electronic machines, including video poker and video keno. The best returns for each category are highlighted in bold print. This even lets you know where to go gamble so your money a little further. Remember, you guys wrote down your gamble, so we know how much you're going to gamble here. All right. So we're going to talk about a big gamble. I mean, it's a big gamble. This is good. We're going into big time. So we're just going to talk about these slot machines in Las Vegas so you understand the small time stuff. All right. So this is Florida slot machine paybacks. And Florida gaming regulations require a minimum payback of 85% on all gaming machines. So if you gamble in Florida, they got to give you back 85 cents in the dollar. All right. But wait, the law says 85%, but what are the casinos actually doing? 90%, 93%. So the casinos are like, whoa, law's nice, but we're going to do better. Okay, good to know, good to know. And in Kansas, the gaming regulations require 87%. Louisiana is my favorite because you can see the government telling the casinos, you have got to pay out at least this much, a minimum. And in Louisiana, it's 80%. But Louisiana, they go one step further. They tell the casino, you may not pay out more than 94%. You've got to keep at least 6%, I guess, so the jurisdiction has something to tax. All right. So Louisiana puts a ceiling on how much they can actually get back to the gambler. So you get the idea. So the government believes anyone foolish enough to gamble needs government protection. And they've established a minimum amount casinos must return to the gambler. In Los Angeles, as I say, they look out for the casino and even have a maximum payout. All right, so you're with me. Now let's go to the bigger gamble, the real gamble, the big time, the big boys, ones that take your life. Yeah. So now in healthcare, you never get a penny back. Not a penny. You hear me? So Las Vegas is ahead already on a dollar-for-dollar basis. Also, there are doctor visits, the ritual bloodletting to measure safety of the drugs you're getting, the parking fees, the co-pays, the monthly insurance payments. We put all this rolled all in, you know. And no one just goes to a doctor and says, oh, no, 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 no. We've got to get dressed up. We've got to put on our, you know, make sure we're nice and clean, put on a little bit of cologne, make sure the hair's good. You can't just go to a doctor's visit. Oh, no. Okay. This is a major investment. So let's look at high blood pressure. First of all, what's the payout? Don't look at the payout. The payout is if you take your pill every single day, if you show up for all your doctor visits, if you submit to the ritual bloodletting, allow yourself to be stabbed and your blood taken, then you will avoid a deadly heart attack. Or only one, right? Just avert one. Okay. So let's take a look and see what we find. So first, this is the article that caught my eye. Your doctor got the same article because this goes out to all doctors all around the world. And this is from Medscape. I'll post it in Facebook if you guys like to keep up. Mm-hmm. This is a hoot. So this article, this is written, you know, on the doctor-friendly, you know, thing, Medscape Family Medicine, and it says, media coverage of new hypertension definition. Is it too positive? Whoa, whoa, whoa. You mean there's a negative side? And they want to know if the media coverage of a new medical definition is too positive. Okay, so media coverage of the 27th, this is February 2019, all right? That's important, February 27th, 2019, and they're now covering the 2017, 2 years ago, expansion of the definition of hypertension. And concentrating mainly on the positives at the time of the initial announcement, little mention of the potential harms a new analysis suggests. Now, Australian researchers conducted a cross-sectional analysis of media coverage of the new definition, which was announced November 2017 and has extended the definition of hypertension so as to include 46% of adults in the United States. So 46% of adults in the United States under the new definition of hypertension are hypertensive. And so the results are reported in a letter published in the February journal issue of the Journal of the American Medical Association, a very respected medical publication. So the expansion of the hypertension definition proposed in the new U.S. American Heart Association guidelines has caused great concerns among some in the medical community, that means doctors, about how it will capture many healthy people. Whoa, whoa, whoa. You mean they're redefining healthy people as ill. They're taking a healthy person, slapping a label across their forehead, illness, hypertension. Okay. Which means, basically, that there's nothing really wrong with them, not even hypertension. So just to say, what they're doing is the same, that this new definition is a lie. All right. Which could lead to a large increase in workload for doctors. Read large increase in revenue, money for doctors. From the worried well. This word well is a marketing term I first heard in business school in 1980. And the goal of all marketing was to expand the worried well and get the worried well to seek medical care and take pills for conditions they were worried about, not conditions they had, because, of course, they were healthy. They had no conditions. Okay, so the definition is going to lead to revenue for doctors from the worried well. The worried well are the best people, by the way, because they're employed. They got revenue. The truly sick are too sick to work. You can't get but so much money out of them. Okay. And unnecessary overtreatment in some. Co-author so-and-so PhD said. Our records showed that the potential benefits of the new definition got a lot more coverage than the potential harms. For their analysis, the researchers used the ProQuest database to conduct a broad search of English language coverage of the new hypertension definition. That definition was presented during the 2017 scientific sessions and was published simultaneously in the Journal of the American College of Cardiology. The analysis included 100 unique media stories, mainly from the mainstream consumer media. Read consumer as in people who spend money. Yes. 15 press releases and 37 journal articles. Media coverage was largely positive about the expanded definition of hypertension, with 98% reporting the benefits of the expanded definition, 67% not even mentioning any harms, 73% favoring benefits overall, and 98% not mentioning any conflicts of interest, researchers felt. And, you know, there's a huge conflict of interest, right, when you allow the American Heart Association, basically in charge, the more heart disease there is, the more business they have, you allow them to expand the guidelines to classify 46% of adults as diseased. Definite conflict of interest. So, Moynihan, a former medical journalist with long-term professional and academic interest in how media covers healthcare, pointed out that coverage of the subject in peer-reviewed medical journals showed a different picture, with much more coverage of the potential harms than was reflected in the media coverage. Now, this is something patients do not understand, not aware of. Whatever your doctor is doing or saying to you, there's a behind-the-door, closed-door conversation going on in the medical profession, basically So it sounds something like this. Well, this new thing here, it's going to harm a lot of people. Yeah, probably kill a few. Mm-hmm. But you know that one person we might identify that could benefit, would benefit, might benefit, would be worth it. Okay, yeah, let's go ahead and do this. And so there's this background conversation going on in the medical literature. So whatever condition you have, if you look in the medical literature, not the media coverage, not the consumer magazines, but in the, which are, those are all publicity paid reports, but in the medical literature, you'll find that whatever your doctor's doing, whether it's giving you penicillin for a strep throat, there's a tremendous amount of disagreement as to whether that's really beneficial. To say nothing of whether it's even effective or safe. Okay. So you know, the media reports were largely based on the first announcement of the new guidelines. The concerns that were conveyed in medical journals were ignored by the media. And he believes this is commonplace. News articles covering medical issues only seem to focus on the headline announcements, which are often positive, but they don't follow up with the downsides, which may take time to surface, he said. No, they're not being paid to focus on the downsides. All right. And so, he says, in concluding their letter, the researchers state, in light of moves to reform disease definition process, our findings suggest a need to improve coverage of expanding disease definitions, especially when those expanding definitions may cause people harm. And so practice guidelines are intended to streamline patient care for the best outcomes of public health, while also being mindful of individual needs, he said. The guidelines outline warnings for treatment in certain populations, and our volunteers and spokespeople have addressed these questions in interviews. And so that's what the American Heart Association is saying. Basically, a big so what, pound sand, goldfish. All right. Now notice, in this whole article, there's no mention of what the guidelines actually were. I said to myself, well, let me go look up the guidelines. Why not? It's always good to know what you're talking about, right? Yeah. I want to have an opinion, but you don't even know what you're having an opinion about. Let's look it up. Let's check it out. I said, oh my God, they're killing people. So these are the new guidelines. This is from Harvard Health Publishing, Harvard Medical School. And it says, reading the new blood pressure guidelines. And do we have a date on this? Not one that's obvious. Okay, so normal blood pressure is now defined as less than 120, top number, and less than 80, bottom number. And elevated is anything over 120 to 130, top number. Actual high blood pressure, stage 1, is 130 to 139. And high blood pressure, stage 2, is 140 or higher. Now get this. Hypertensive crisis, consult your doctor immediately, is higher than 180. Now, I'm an old timer, so I can tell you that back in 1960, hypertension was defined as 150, 150. So back in 1960, hypertension was defined as a blood pressure of 150 over 90 or higher. In other words, these three categories of elevated, stage 1, stage 2, they were all considered normal. So what we've done is we've taken healthy people and classified them as unhealthy. Now, I can tell you my personal experience in taking care of patients is really at the 150 mark or lower, has anyone ever had any problems with their blood pressure? My observation, for what it's worth, 20 years in the medical field, that includes medical school training and practicing medicine. Okay. Now, the other thing I noticed, though, if a person is actually taking blood pressure medicines and their systolic blood pressure is less than 130 and they're on medicines, then they have a lot of problems like passing out, weakness, impotence, Alzheimer's, forgetfulness, all of this because blood just is not circulating to all of their organs. They don't have enough pressure to deliver blood to their organs. So this is my personal observation. Of course, I don't do research, so let's look at the research. Next. So if you didn't have high blood pressure before, there's a good chance you do now. Meanwhile, your blood pressure has not changed, right? So your blood pressure has not changed. So if you didn't have high blood pressure before, you've got it now. Why? Well, they changed the rules. They moved the goalposts. In any other sport, this would be called cheating, but that's okay. It's medicine. So the American College of Cardiology and 9 other health organizations lowered the numbers for the diagnosis of hypertension to 130 and higher for all adults. The previous guidelines set the threshold at 140 for people younger than 65 and 150 for those 65 and older. Basically, if you take a person 65 and older and lower their blood pressure, top number less than 150 using drugs, you're going to have an Alzheimer's patient on your hands pretty darn quick. And you also have some kidney failure, too. That's bad news. This means that up to 79% of men age 55 and older are now classified as having hypertension. That includes many men whose blood pressure had previously been considered healthy. Why the change? Blood pressure guidelines are not updated at regular intervals. Instead, they are changed when enough new evidence suggests the old ones were not accurate or relevant anymore. Okay, so this is when new evidence suggests. All right. Says an endocrinologist with Harvard-affiliated Brigham and Women's Hospital. The goal now with the new guidelines is to help people address high blood pressure and the problems that may accompany it, like heart attack and stroke, much earlier. So the new guidelines stem from the 2017 results of the systolic blood pressure intervention trial, SPRINT. Now listen carefully to this one and see if you can catch the tricky language. Which studied more than 9,000 adults aged 50 and older who had systolic blood pressure, top number in a reading of 130 or higher, and at least one risk factor for cardiovascular disease. Study's aim was to find out whether treating blood pressure to lower the systolic to 120 or less was superior to the standard target of 140. The results found that targeting a blood pressure of no more than 120 reduced the chance of heart attacks, heart failure, or stroke over a 3-year period. Read, it did not reduce it over a 1-year period. Just saying. So the new guidelines have other changes too. First, they don't offer different recommendations for people younger or older than age 65. This is because the SPRINT study looked at all patients regardless of age and didn't break down groups above or below a certain age. Okay, so let's put this in English. They don't offer different recommendations for people younger or older than 65 because they didn't look at that. They didn't look at that category. So it's not that they don't offer different recommendations because the research showed it wasn't necessary. No, it's because they didn't research it. So they're just going to give one size fits all. Okay? There's a red flag right there. Guidelines also redefined various categories of hypertension. It eliminated the category of pre-hypertension, which had been defined as systolic blood pressure of 120 to 139, and they renamed it instead of pre-hypertension, which means it's not hypertension. They call it elevated. Instead, those people are classified as having elevated blood pressure or stage 1 hypertension. And so they basically changed out a pretty so-so title, pre-hypertension, and advanced it to elevated blood pressure. So you're not pre-anything, you have something, you've got it, it's elevated. So the new guidelines note that blood pressure should be monitored on a regular basis and encourage people to use home blood pressure monitors. It can range from $40 to $100 on average. So now we have a new piece of equipment for every home ranging from $40 to $100. But don't worry, your insurance may cover part or all of the cost. So here's how you take your blood pressure. Get this. Avoid caffeinated or alcoholic beverages 3 minutes beforehand. Well, wait a minute. What if you drink coffee or alcohol every day? I mean, wouldn't that be an accurate measure of the blood pressure? Whatever. Sit quietly for 5 minutes with your back supported and your legs uncrossed. Support your arms so your elbow is at or near heart level. Wrap the cuff over bare skin. Don't talk during the measurement. Leave the deflated cuff in place. Wait a minute, then take a second reading. the readings are close, average them. If not, repeat again. And average the three readings. Keep a record of your blood pressure readings, including the time of day. All right. What should you do? Based on new information in the guidelines, your doctor may propose treating your blood pressure to a lower level. May propose? Why wouldn't he propose? They're all abnormal. The larger issue is that many men ages 65 and older suddenly find themselves diagnosed with elevated or high blood pressure, since the new normal is a whopping 20 points lower than before. Does this mean an automatic prescription for blood pressure drugs? Not necessarily. They should consult with their doctor about first adjusting lifestyle habits, such as getting more exercise, losing weight, and following a heart-healthy diet like DASH, or Mediterranean diet. Medications are recommended to lower blood pressure in stage 1 hypertension. That's 130 systolic. If you've already had a heart attack or stroke, or if your 10-year risk of a heart attack is higher than 10%. Overall, the new guidelines may help people get more involved with monitoring their blood pressure, which can hopefully prevent complications from hypertension. Hopefully? Wait, we're going to hope and a prayer here? Don't we have any statistics or numbers of efficacy? So for that, we have to go to what they tell the stupid doctors. That's family practice doctors. That's what I like. Family practice doctors. Yes. This is what they tell the doctors who are not very bright. Yes. When I was training in family practice program, my fellow family practice doctors were very concerned about their low status in the echelon of doctors. And I said, hey, not to worry. As long as my patients like me, I'm okay. So this is what they say to the doctors. And here's where you got to sharpen your pencil. Sharpen your pencil. You got to do your math here. And so this is the American Family Physician, and it's an editorial, what is new and what do we do? What do we do? So this is written by a doctor, Michael Lefebvre, MD. And he also has a master's in public health. Nice. It says, redefining the cutoff point above which the value of physiologic measurements reflects a disease has huge implications. So basically, redefining a disease. You have a disease, it hasn't changed. You just change the definition of it. The recently released guidelines of American College of Cardiology and American Heart Association on the prevention, detection, evaluation, and management of high blood pressure in adults is summarized in this issue of American Family Physician. Now, it says blood pressure is a dynamic, not static measurement. So blood pressure actually normally does change throughout the day, by the way. They can vary in a 10 to 30 point range based on where, when, and how it's measured. So new guidelines appropriately address blood pressure measurement. Properly obtained measurements have been the standard in clinical trials, but require about 10 minutes and are not routinely obtained in office setting. So no one in the office is taking 10 minutes to measure a blood pressure. And also out-of-office readings use 12 to 24-hour ambulatory or home blood pressure monitoring, really for the best guidance. Now, this is very exciting, because they actually give these poor family practice doctors some numbers to look at. What new evidence is supporting the changing of blood pressure cutoff for hypertension to 130 over 80? Well, 9 research trials contributed to this meta-analysis on which the guideline was based. So in other words, research was done, information was gathered, and then they went back and looked at old research without redesigning a new trial specifically to answer this question. So just to let you know, no new research was done. They just looked back at old research. All right. So we're going to go to commercial, and we will be back.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
How healthy are your arteries? Deteriorating circulation has a number of early warning signs. High cholesterol, high blood pressure, fingers and or toes often go cold, arms and or legs often go to sleep, sharp diagonal crease in the earlobe, short walks cause cramping or pains in legs, memory is not as good as it used to be, ankles swell late in the day, chest pain after physical exercise or emotional stress. If you experience even one of these symptoms, your circulatory system is crying out for attention. Extendivite is a natural solution to help improve your overall health. Extendivite is not your average heart tonic. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com or find us on Amazon.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Tired of being lied to by mass media? It's growing more and more apparent today that news is received less and less through standard media outlets. Even with a growing audience every day, RBN is beginning to direct more efforts into social media. Social media and the use of the internet is fast becoming the primary source of people for news, regardless of demographic. RBN has set out to provide some of the best news on the internet through republicbroadcasting.org and also has begun to use the tools to our advantage by way of social media. Republic Broadcasting is now operating a Facebook page to function as yet another avenue to have our collective voice reach new audiences across not only America, but across the globe as well. The Facebook page features not only news, but also an RBN player to listen to our broadcast. Get involved by visiting facebook.com/republicbroadcasting and liking our page and share it with your friends and family, because you can handle the truth.
Welcome back to Healing with Dr. Nance. We are going to talk about what may be the biggest gamble of your life. Now, thank goodness for family practice doctors. They feel like they have to break it down to family practice doctors so they absolutely understand. Okay, so we're looking at the new evidence that supports the change in the definition of hypertension. So the two largest trials followed patients an average of 3.3 and 4.7 years. No statistically significant benefit was found for all-cause mortality. Got that? Are you with me? So people who took blood pressure medicines for up to 4.7 years had no decrease in all-cause mortality. Put more specifically, they did not live 8 minutes longer. All right. And the difference for fatal or non-fatal heart attacks was borderline. It might have been better than chance or not. Only composite major cardiovascular events and the combination of fatal and non-fatal stroke were decreased. So wait, They're going to help you avoid a non-fatal stroke. That's not going to be live longer. Major cardiovascular disease events, some are fatal, some are not. What was the decline? 6.2% versus 7.3% over 3 years. What? Excuse me, a 1% difference over 3 years? So 1/3 of 1% over the course of a year? Really? So you gotta really get a grip on this, and let's go back to our casino example. So 1/3 of 1%. Means at the end of the year, there's a 99.997% chance of no benefit. You with me? So at the end of 1 year, if you had placed your bet, got high blood pressure, decided to get treated, you would have lost all the money you invested and have a 99.997% chance of receiving no benefit, no medical benefit. Now, even in the realm of math, if you round that using generally accepted rounding principles, that's 100% 1 year chance of no benefit. So you've lost all the cash you've laid out for your health insurance, for your medication, transportation to the doctors, parking fees, co-pays, deductibles, all that out the window. Benefit, zero. Okay. So based on this information, only composite major heart disease and fatal and non-fatal stroke were significantly decreased. When I say significantly, they don't mean clinical significance to the individual. They mean statistical significance, as in mathematically determined that there was indeed a difference between the two numbers, however minuscule. All right? So, but here is where the meat of the matter is. The numbers needed to treat was 200. 200. So 200 people needed to receive treatment in order for one person to experience a benefit. And that benefit may have been avoiding a non-fatal stroke. So let's take a look at this. We have 200 people. And 1 in 200 is going to benefit. That's 5 per 1,000, in case you're mathematically challenged. But wait. If we say the payout is the benefit, then we're working with a payout of 0.005%. In other words, the house, we'll call it the medical industrial complex, is keeping 99.5%. The benefit is not there. So the benefit is more imaginary. So let's look at it this way. Is it okay for 5,000 people to pay rent when at the end of 1 year, or we'll say the end of each month, we'll accelerate it for you. At the end of each month, only five of those 1,000 people will have an apartment to stay in. All the rest, you just say, sorry, thanks for the money. Glad you pay the rent. No housing for you. This is the equivalent of what the new hypertensive guidelines are doing. And this is exactly what they are telling the family practice doctors. They're saying, look, you family practice doctors, you're so dumb. We're going to break down the numbers for you. Whereas in all the other journals, they're like, you guys understand it. You know, we'll just tell you to do it, you do it, because you understand it. You know, we've thought about this. The researchers have looked at it. Da-da-da-da-da. And this happened over and over and over again in medical school. They would give us this whole big lecture on some condition, whether it's diabetes or heart disease, whatever. And then they would tell us how many people got better, lived longer, and the number was so friggin' small, it was embarrassing. Can you imagine telling somebody, someone says to you, what time is it? And you give them the time, and your chances of being accurate are only 5 out of 1,000. That's what treating this blood pressure is going to do. It's going to help literally 5 people out of 1,000. Now let's do some other math. Math is pretty cool. So if half a person per year is out of 100 is going to get benefit, how many years would you need to take this medication on average to get a 100% chance of benefit? Right? Because you want 100% chance, right? I want to pay my money. I want a return. So how far out in the future do you have to go in order to get a return? The answer? 200 years. You would have to take your blood pressure medication for 200 years in order to be confident that you would receive benefit. 200 years. In other words, you would have to figure out on your own how to stay alive for 200 years. That's your problem. But at the year 201, there would be a 100% chance this medicine would help you. Yes. Now, there's a gamble. There's a gamble. I say, if you take that gamble, you should definitely sign up for Gamblers Anonymous. Yes. So if you're taking blood pressure medicines, well, you just go sign up for Gamblers Anonymous. Just work through that. Just work through that. Oh, my God. So what does the American Heart Association suggest we do with these patients now labeled with uncontrolled hypertension? Treat them. Institute lifestyle measures. Use pharmacotherapy. Intensify therapy for those already on medication. In other words, totally free and interfere with their life and just ruin it if we can. Recommendations for lifestyle modification alone apply only to adults younger than 65 who have a 10-year cardiovascular risk of less than 10%. The guideline is, however, vague about what to do for these patients when they return for follow-up in 3 to 6 months. So if someone is labeled with hypertension, they should see their doctor every 3 months, no matter what. Intensive behavioral counseling results in an average decrease in systolic blood pressure of about 2 millimeters after 24 months. In other words, intensive behavioral counseling is ineffective. So 2 millimeters of mercury, in other words, a decrease from 150 top number to 148 top number, you get that decrease just drinking a glass of water. Probably better than that. So the easy path would be to make the leap to medication rather than leave this disease uncontrolled. And they put the disease in parentheses. Even the person writing this is not quite sure it's really a disease. It's more an opportunity to treat. And this person finally says, it is an overreach. That means an inappropriate behavior to take the results of existing trial data and label everyone who has a blood pressure above 130 as having uncontrolled hypertension, especially when that label will be applied on the basis of the most recent routine office blood pressure measurement. Much harm will come if this change is widely accepted and implemented, especially if quality measures that echo this definition are put into place. Ooh. So quality measures means those are measurements your doctor is obligated to follow, and he gets punished if he does not follow them. And so what they're saying that if you put these rules into place and punish a doctor for not following this definition, a lot of harm is going to be done. Harms from the consequences of poor measurement, over medication, and arbitrary quality measures can easily offset the small reduction in heart disease events found in trials of high-risk persons. Now, this is important. They took the highest-risk people, and even in them, the reduction in heart disease was minuscule. As I said, it takes 200 years of treating them to get benefits for each person. More than 90% of participants in the SPRINT trial whose blood pressure targets were reduced were already receiving treatment. Few data, read no data, exist for initiating treatment at this new threshold. So in other words, they are taking studies done on people that does not apply to what they're suggesting. They're suggesting drugs be started or initiated somebody with a blood pressure of 130 over 80. Not that someone who's already on drugs with a blood pressure of 130 over 80 have the drugs adjusted to achieve a lower blood pressure. Those are two very different things. If you give a medication to a person 130 over 80 who's never had medicines, the one pill could kill them. Or the one pill could drop their blood pressure so low that they would pass out, hit their head, and sustain a serious injury. And so this guy makes a very good case. So all the studies they looked at to decide this were based on people who were already taking hypertensive medicines. So the study did not answer the question about starting new medications. Yet it was used to create a guideline for starting new medication. And that's not what the study examined. So notably, serious adverse events occurred in 37% of persons in the intervention and control groups, respectively. So 38% bad stuff. Oh, 38% of people with intervention had bad problems. And the control, the do-nothing group, had 37% bad stuff happen. So rates of low blood pressure, passing out, electrolyte abnormalities, these are all complications of blood pressure, of the medicine. Acute kidney injury, acute renal failure, that means dialysis, increased significantly in the intervention group. And so these are serious problems. So in treating hypertension, we are treating a risk factor in a patient with no symptoms to prevent disease. We're not treating a disease to relieve suffering. This is an important thing to get. Most persons who receive preventive medicine will not benefit, and many will be harmed. Choosing a threshold and target for treatment should be based on the science supporting cardiovascular disease risk reduction, while considering the benefits and harms of individual patients, circumstances, and respective patient choice. So what this guy is saying is, hey, let's get real. We're treating a risk factor, not a disease. And people who have no symptoms, in other words, they're healthy. We're trying to prevent the disease, which is heart disease. We're not treating a disease to relieve suffering. They have no symptoms. And so again, this is the ultimate gamble. You have no disease, no problem, no symptoms. It's a number on a piece of paper. And the research, the most favorable research shows you would need to take this drug for 200 years before you would receive benefit. Are you going to do it? Are you going to do it? Let me go look at my Facebook people. All right. All right. So your Facebook people, you did not write down what your gamble was. No one wrote down your gamble. Well, I hope you guys at home did a better job than that. And so here's another reference. It says, you may be familiar with the idea that hypertension should be treated when your blood pressure is higher than 140. Now, based on studies, the experts suggest starting drug therapy only when the reading is 150 or higher. This is December 2013. So from December 2013 to December 2017, 4 years, that number dropped from 150 to 120. What happened? You know what I think? I think it's those fall fashion shows in Paris. Yes, sir, Bob. Those fall fashion shows in Paris. And so for sure, you know that your blood pressure treatment has all the accuracy and validity of a Paris fall fashion show. Change on a whim from year to year to sell you more stuff. That's it. That's all it is. So those of you in the, so I'll tell you what happened to my mother. So as you know, Mom's struggling with an ulcer. But that's not all. Mom was also put on blood pressure medicine for her blood pressure because her blood pressure was, well, I think 140-ish. So she's taking blood pressure medicine, and she's feeling tired and dopey. She can't get anything done, you know, and she can't remember anything. She's just, the least little thing, she just forgets it. And so finally, she gives me this phone. She calls me and says, oh, you know, I don't know. I think something's not right here. And she explained all the medicines she's taking. She's taking something for glaucoma, for hypertension, aspirin a day, of course, to prevent who knows what. And I look up all of her drugs, and we sort it all out. And the eye drops are elevating her blood pressure. The blood pressure medicine is making her forgetful, and on and on and on. And so what gave her some inkling something was wrong. Well, she was so busy one day, and she just got so confused, and she just forgot to take her medicine that night. And she woke up and felt great. And so she stopped her medicine, hasn't taken it since, and guess what? This 87-year-old lady feels wonderful. And she's back in her car, driving, having a good time. We're going to commercial, and
homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2-KEEP-IT-TODAY.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AROutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds, up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AirOutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magpul clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AirOutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AROutfitting.com.
Do you know there is an ongoing war right here in America? Are you aware that U.S. citizens have been classified as enemies of the state since 1933? Have you recognized that our entire government is really a vast network of interlocking corporations engaged in commerce? Look up Title 28, Section 3002. Tune in to In Defense of Humanity on Saturday nights at 7 p.m. Central Time. Find out what's really going on and learn how to protect yourself and your family as flesh and blood men and women living in a corporate reality.
Dr. Daniels, and welcome back to Healing with Dr. Daniels. And we are talking about the gamble of a lifetime. Actually, I'd say it's a gamble of two lifetimes at least, maybe three lifetimes. And this is getting your blood pressure treated, or your hypertension treated, according to the new guidelines. And by their own admission, medical industrial complex, it will take on average 200 years of therapy for you to take these drugs and experience benefit. Amazing. And when you consider that most people are diagnosed with high blood pressure or start medication maybe somewhere around age 40, then the chances of you living an additional 200 years to realize the benefits is just about, well, zero. Zero, nada, nothing. So what's a person to do? First of all, I'd like to say, this is absolutely not the practice of medicine. This doesn't diagnose, treat, or improve any condition, just my observations, opinions, and some research presented to you by, of course, only the experts. So basically, taking a look at this table and the information that has been presented by these experts, the American Academy of Family Practice, American Medical Association, the Harvard group, then if we take a look at this, what it suggests is that the hypertensive crisis, which is treating blood pressures of 180 systolic or more, might have some value. But treating at even 150 or less does not appear to have any benefit within the person's natural lifetime. We'll just say maybe you'll live to be 110 years. Let's just pick a number. You got to pick some kind of goalpost here. So if you expect to live to 110 and your goal is to live to 110 in the best health possible, then taking blood pressure medications does not appear to be a reasonable strategy. That I'd have to just leave it at that. That's number one. Number two, the next question people say, well, what do I do about my high blood pressure? Well, the question is, should you do anything at all? And so based on the information they presented, it does not appear you should do anything at all because it's not going to become a problem in your lifetime. Now, this is if you have no symptoms. What if you have symptoms? If you have symptoms, that's another matter. So your blood pressure is elevated and you have symptoms that go along with that blood pressure elevation, then it's worth increasing your water intake, increasing your bowel movements, changing your food to food that you prepare and cook at home using no processed ingredients. What's a processed ingredient? A processed ingredient is something that on the package has more than one ingredient. That's obvious. It's more than one ingredient, boom, it's been processed. Okay. Another red flag for a processed ingredient is that it did not come from the produce section of the supermarket or your backyard, or it's not a vegetable straight from the ground. So if it's not a fruit or vegetable straight from the ground or the tree, it's probably processed. As far as meats, if you eat them, you should get them from your butcher. Grandma was right. You get meat from the butcher. You don't get meat from the grocery store. So if you're going to eat meat, definitely go to the butcher. Don't go to the grocery store. And you want to get the full cut. Whatever the cut is, you want that full cut, skin included. So that would be a definition of processed, unprocessed food. Another definition of unprocessed food is like the dried rice, red, black, or black or brown rice. Oh, we are going to commercial.
I saw you there, just standing there, and I thought I was only dreaming, yeah. I kissed you then, and then once again.